Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're here on another weekend of non-rugby, unless you're in the Southern Hemisphere. And as always, faithful old Phil.
I think maybe it's not quite right to say I'm always here, but right now I am in studio with you.
Yes.
I have had various different
locations,
sojourns around the world.
Yeah, and like me, I have missed one podcast in 4 years.
Which one was that, out of interest? Oh, it was when you're on your honeymoon.
Honeymoon. Yeah. I do know what, I regret it to this day.
You regret most things from your honeymoon, don't you?
Well, yes. And down the line, Tim Cocker.
In the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container, potentially soon to be redundant TMO shipping container, which is one of the talking points for the pod, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh. Why? What have I missed?
Well, we'll get into that in a little bit. There you go, little tease for you, JB.
Oh, little tease. Well, in the meantime, why don't you go and look at our various forms of social media. We're on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast, at Cocker, at Jay Beardmore. Phil is very much under the radar. We have Facebook and we've got
Phil's
Instagram.
Phil's a smart man.
Say again.
Phil is a smart man. The more time, honestly, I'm so close to just packing in Twitter. It is a time vacuum. It is a divisive, horrible place.
Do you know what?
There's very little redeeming features about it.
I thought the same thing today. I thought when rugby isn't on, I'm going to turn off my Twitter because I'm reduced to tweeting about things which nobody cares that I care about.
Yes. Apart from Love Island, of course. You do a little bit of tweeting about that.
Oh, you know. Every now and again. Right, boys. I'm not going to lie, I've not really read Phil's running order. So, Phil, why don't you tell me what to talk about?
Well, Tim, I know that you're always, always prepared.
Of course.
Where do you want to start? There's quite a bit of news on and off the field this week, even though there's not really been much rugby.
Yes, there has. You're absolutely right. So I think we should round up just some of the sort of newsy stories and then we can get into some meatier things in a little bit. So go on, Phil. We'll let you lead off. What's your gut telling you?
Well, the first thing that I want to talk about is my initial scepticism, but as I've had time to let the story digest, my current pleasure at the announcement that Ulster have signed Billy Burns from Gloucester. Now, my first reaction was kind of meh, but Ulster clearly need a fly half.
Yep.
They've only got Johnny McPhillips at the moment on their books, who's an out-and-out fly half. There was the failed attempt to convince Joey Carberry to come north. There was the failed signing of Elton Yanchis, which was blocked by the IRFU because he's a non-Irish qualified player.
Okay, so who is the other non-Irish?
Not blocked by him because he's a potentially awful signing.
He's a great signing.
In the wind and rain at Ravenhill.
Oh, how much money? Be honest now. You know, how much money would you pay to watch Elton Yanchis in the worst Ulster weather try and run a back line? Unlimited amounts of money.
It would be entertaining if you weren't an Ulster fan. But I'm actually... So the more I think about it, the more I quite like this signing. So first of all, I had no idea that he was Irish qualified.
Nope.
When you put the caveat that Ulster have got to sign someone Irish qualified, and seemingly no one Irish qualified wants to play for Ulster other than the people that are already here, and even they, after the last couple of seasons, don't really want to play for Ulster. You're really narrowing down your limits of fly halves.
Yeah.
I mean, other than trying to convince Ian Madigan, who's on like $500,000 a year, so you're not going to convince him. I'm not sure. Or now, clearly, Billy's brother, Freddie, could potentially... Well, no, actually, no, because he's capped. Yeah, so he's not even that.
Yeah, poor guy.
So, yeah, you're probably down to maybe one or two people in the world. But Billy Burns,
you know what,
is not a bad operator.
I mean, there's probably a ton of them, actually. And huge amounts of credit have to go to the Irish scouting system. I mean, they must really be on top of their game. The amount of guys that are plucked out of obscurity, I mean... there are a couple of lads from Sale that went, Mitchell, scrum half, yeah, no big whoop. But it just shows how keyed in they are to all these players. The Haley signing was phenomenal because they had to work out who was the capture team, when did he play,
Yep. Approach
him, get him over. I bet they knew about Burns for a long, long time.
Probably from when he was playing England, because he's played England under 18 and England under 20.
Yeah.
So they were probably eyeing him up from then, and now's the time.
Such a good system that they've got running there.
But yeah, it's not... I don't think it's bad news for Ulster. I think
it's great. How could it be
and
bad
also,
news?
And also, JB, it's kind of... yes, I agree. We've talked in lots of different ways about why the Irish system is so good, but it's not like he's been poached from under the noses of England.
No.
Nor has Will Addison, nor has Mike Haley.
No. And yeah,
just
everything has worked perfectly, hasn't it? Because he's going to be fighting for time with Sippers. It does make me question a little bit Gloucester's thought process here, because everyone knows that I'm a huge Cipriani fan.
Yep.
He's a great player. But everyone also knows that I'm a huge Ben Darwin fan, and these things seem to intersect here. So, like, the amount of extra money that they've paid Cipriani, because I assume they'll pay him more than Burns. I don't know, but I assume they'll pay him more.
Of course they will, yeah.
Absolutely, they'll be paying him considerably more.
I mean, put it this way.
And also, he won't have their academy credits, which Burns had, and he wouldn't have their English... Well, yeah, just the academy credits, actually.
Yeah. So, put it this way, OK? The only team in the league who are not up to their salary cap or have substantial space left and really want to spend it are Sale Sharks. Steve Diamond said, I think to me, and maybe to Cocker at the same time, I don't know if you were there for this one, Tim, that they couldn't afford him, right? He was out of their price range. So Gloucester are paying him a fortune, and how much better will he be in the 2 years that he's there for than Billy Burns, particularly in his first year? And do Gloucester need to spend that amount of money on upgrading a fly half position when they've already had Burns and they already have a guy on allegedly 300,000+ in Owen Williams?
Owen Williams.
I'll answer that one shortly and succinctly. Yes.
Wow, really?
So it's Gloucester. Gloucester have not had an orchestrator, playmaker, like on-field quarterback for years, and I'm even including the Freddie Burns time. That he's not been able to. He wasn't able to do that himself. They haven't had it for years.
Mm.
So I'm kind of with you on this, Tim, and I think. You look how well he slotted into the England team in his first game in that difficult third test. I think it will take him a little bit of time to get up to speed. I think he will quite quickly get up to speed. So I think they're both quite good bits of business. And Gloucester 100% have ambitions of top four this season and pushing and contesting for the league. And I think... they can do that much better with someone like Sippers, the experience of someone like Sippers.
I don't know is the answer. I think you have him for 3 years. I think by year one and a half, he's bedding in. You've got to remember, the beauty of the way Cipriani plays is how he brings everyone else onto the ball around him. It's going to take a while for those blokes to learn how he plays, what lines to run, so on and so forth.
But it didn't take the England boys very long to learn.
And
no,
didn't really take,
but well, how, it
took,
how did they
took
score?
Him a while at Sale, but and it took him a little while at Wasps. But I wouldn't mind betting that in both of those situations, it's because of things off of the field.
No, it's because he has to be the main man. He has to be the main man. So wherever he goes, I'm not making this up. He actually runs the show. He is the guy that tells you how he wants to play, the moves he wants to run. Nobody tells Danny Cipriani now how to play, because if you do, he'll play terribly.
So I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is the last 2 years, he's grown up a hell of a lot. And I think he's the first to admit that.
I think he was quite quite mature at Sale, personally.
I think he has grown up a lot. Definitely the last few years. So probably from when he came back from Australia.
No. He took a while. He was the number two behind Nick McLeod at Sale for a little while.
Just remember, Nick McLeod is a phenomenal talent.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not knocking. He was a good squad man, was Nick McLeod. But there was obviously something not right if you signed Danny Cipriani and he can't get in your team.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's
a good
point. And it's not Danny Cipriani's abilities as a player.
No, it's not. And just going back to the England thing, the England boys ran off him immediately. They didn't actually. I mean, it was that little stab to the corner, which got England the try. I do think it'll take time for him to bed in. I think Gloucester already have enough problems trying to work out who the best 15 is. That's their biggest problem. It's not the quality of players. They've got huge amounts of quality players. I just don't know if they know what their best team is. And kind of Danny Cipriani muddies the water even more for them, as good as he is.
They didn't know who their best 10 was. Was it Billy Twelve Trees? Was it Billy Burns? Was it Owen Williams? So at least now they know.
That's exactly right.
Let's just sort that out.
How do you think it plays out between Owen Williams and Danny Cipriani now?
It doesn't play out. It doesn't. There's now a number one and a number two.
Yeah, but it's a hell of a lot of money to spend on a number two.
Yeah, it is.
Unless your number two goes to 12.
Well, but then again, if you want to be competing on and challenging, then you're going to need two quality operators. And Danny Cipriani looks like he could well be spending a big chunk of the season not with his club. So
they could be really lucky and have both their tens not with their club. I mean, that would be an absolute disaster. In which case, they better hope
it's a terrible signing if that's the case.
Well, they better hope that there's a third Burns lad somewhere.
Right.
There's another bit of news then, which Anthony Watson's going to spend an extra 6 months on the sideline beyond where he was forecast to be. To be spending, it's there's more complications in his return to action.
Yeah,
and six more months out.
6 more months. What are the complications?
He's got another operation on his. It's his Achilles tendon, I think, or certainly an ankle injury.
Oh, no.
So
that's very
bad
disappointing.
News. Bad news for England. Bad news for Bath as well.
And with that type of injury as well, it's a concern that what made him so potent. He might have to adjust his game a little bit.
Potentially.
Which I think he's capable of doing, but it's going to be, with that kind of injury, it's going to be tough to be the Anthony Watson we knew.
Yeah. So he's still a young lad. He's still only 24, 25, I think. If he's even that. So he's got time on his side, certainly. He'll be getting the best medical and physiotherapy care, so hopefully he'll come back strong.
Yeah.
Just one little note. Apparently, there's no sound on the Facebook feed, Jay.
Yeah, fix that.
We fixed it. Good.
Ish. You can't hear Cocker, but okay. I'm working on it. I'm going to close it down in a second.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, if you can't hear me, it's not worth hearing.
Exactly.
Okay. So, have there been many other transfer rumours or news this week?
Matt Tamua.
Tamua.
So, I mentioned this on Twitter, I think. I do not know. I'm going to say right now, I do not know the exact details of this, other than Australia are very interested in bringing Matt Tamua back. And they're also very interested in bringing Palotta Nal back.
Interesting.
Now, this would be bad if the two clubs in question each lost a player each. Unfortunately, it's one club.
Yep.
And
they were two of their best players last season.
Yes.
Two of the absolute standout players for Leicester Tigers last season.
So we've been critical of Leicester in the past. I mean, let's just say, hypothetically, the idea of a World Cup gets to Palotta now. Thinks, I've got to go. I've got to play this World Cup. That would mean that Leicester have gone from a situation where they're basically their club captain, backed up by two promising young hookers in
McGuigan.
McGuigan, thank you. And
Thacker. Harry Thacker.
They've now brought in a guy who, I think, was he 32 or 33?
Palotta Nal.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's certainly early 30s.
He's early 30s, right? So they've replaced two young lads with a guy in his early 30s.
Two young English qualifiers.
Two young English. It gets worse, doesn't it?
Yeah, English lads, yeah.
It gets worse and worse and worse. Two English qualified lads have now gone to competitor teams.
Yeah.
And their early 30s hooker might be off to Australia. I mean, it is beyond that. I think, in terms of squad construction, is beyond a joke. And then there's Tomiwa. So if Tomiwa goes, Leicester are seriously short of quality, in my opinion.
So they've still got Tom Youngs. They have. I spotted it was an Instagram post from Leicester Tigers this week, and they've brought in two guys that I don't know where they've come from. I'm assuming they're coming. They've come from the Championship.
Okay.
There was a picture of three of their squad hookers.
Hmm.
So right now they have got four squad hookers.
Yeah.
But two of them are complete unknowns.
I mean, Thacker would be a good guy to have kept about, to be honest.
Yeah.
He does all sorts of things. He plays within the squad. I think Matt O'Connor has his favourites and he has his starting 15 and that will be that. And there's not really much changing his mind.
This is not this.
Surely the Tamua issue is much more pressing than the potential hooker issue.
It is.
Yeah, but do you know what? I actually think it's probably slightly. I don't know, actually. Yeah, you are right. Tamua is more pressing. But there again, I kind of think it's easier to find yourself a real high quality centre, or at least a serviceable centre, than it is to find a real high quality hooker.
Ooh, I'm not sure about that.
Do you not think?
I'm not sure about that at all.
I think you look at England's options at 12 for one.
Yeah. That's fair.
Owen Farrell.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned England's options for 12. Because England's options for 12 could well be solved with the same person that's going to solve Leicester's options for 12.
Manu Tuilagi.
Incorrect.
Kyle Eastmond.
Correct him, Cocker.
Will not solve England's issues at 12, I don't
think. I think he can solve any issues at 12. If he's on form and not injured, and that's a huge if. A huge if. The boy's as good as anyone in England at playing 12. He might not be as good in certain areas, but in some areas he's definitely the best, and his overall game is superb.
So I would question that because I've just not seen it for probably a couple of years now.
Mm.
I mean, last season he had horrendous injuries.
Yep.
Last two seasons he had horrendous
Achilles
injuries.
Achilles is a horrible one.
Again, Achilles. The game he came back, or one of his first game back, he got an 8-week ban for two repeated high shots. Two high shots in 2 minutes.
Which, by the way, you have to really try when you're 5'2" to get a high shot in, don't you? I mean, you've got to be pretty determined.
One of them was on Tim Visser, who's like 6'4", 6'5".
It just shows the athleticism that the guy possesses.
Well, from Leicester's perspective, with Manu Tuilagi in their squad and with George Ford going to be away for a significant chunk, they need something as dependable and reliable as they can get. Or they need to sign Kyle Eastmond, but who clearly it's probably a buyer's market where Kyle Eastmond is concerned, and they need to get him at a heavily discounted rate and get someone else as well.
Brendan Macken is the other guy.
Yeah, from Wasps.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
does that excite you to Tim?
Solid squad player. No, it doesn't. It wouldn't excite me.
It doesn't excite me either.
Even getting those two and losing Matt Tamua is a net loss.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Completely
significant net loss.
Definitely.
I think the problem that Matt O'Connor has is he likes his starting 15, and you know, I think once he selects a player in a position, he's completely wedded to that player. So I think it's actually an enormous loss for Leicester.
I wonder if they could, because I think Ben Teo has 1 year left on his contract. I wonder if they could do what they did with Johnny May and kind of buy him out.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Be good for England as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'd be interesting to see whether we start seeing more of that or less of that. Because there was the rule change, wasn't there, with compensation for buying players out, which was what Leicester took advantage of that for the Johnny May position.
Yeah, they just paid a nominal fee, 60,000 or something like that. Don't quote me on it. I don't know exactly what it was.
Yeah, but it certainly wasn't the worth of Johnny May for 1 or 2 years, however long was left on his contract.
No, it wasn't.
God, Leicester in a way, aren't they? I mean, they really should have the most powerful squad in the Premiership. They should have the deepest, most powerful squad. Well, yeah, because potentially they're also one of the few clubs that could be profitable as well.
Yeah, but the salary cap doesn't matter really, does it?
The salary cap makes everybody's chances the same in that sense.
Yeah.
Theoretically, yeah.
Yeah, but their bad management of the cap, that's more the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. We can return to Leicester when we know more about who the replacements are and when if Palotta now is off as well to follow his World Cup dream.
Mm.
Yeah.
I've got one little bit of news which I want to throw into the mix.
Ooh, exciting.
The details of the final 20th World Cup place for 2019 yes. has been announced. And it's going to be happening in Marseille in a middle weekend in November. And there are four teams involved. One of them Hong Kong. One of them will be Germany.
Yeah.
One of them will be
Canada.
And one of them will be the runners-up in the African Gold Cup, which will likely be either Namibia or Kenya, depending on who wins the match, which is looking like a bit of a playoff decider on the 18th of August. And that will be happening, a round-robin set of fixtures over 3 or 4 days will be happening on the one of the weeks in November during the Autumn Internationals in Marseille. I've checked Skyscanner. Flights are very, very reasonable. You can get from the UK to Marseille return currently for £47, price to start.
Wow.
Return. So potentially, I think there's an excursion there. And potentially, it might be a really good tier two tour.
Okay.
It might be a very good tier two tour. So it is just one point. I think all of that was spot on. It's actually over three weekends because it's...
Oh, is it really?
It's four...
Oh, yeah, that makes much more sense. So they can do a round robin in 3 days.
Yeah. It would be a tough to play a four-team round robin in 3 days. So, yeah, it's the kind of... I can't remember the exact dates, but something like the 8th, the 15th and the 23rd. Those weekends in November.
So... Not to pull back the curtain too much on how we produce the podcast. I would love to go to this, right? And I'd love to do a tier two tour there. Two problems. The thought of organising another tier two tour right now, I mean, it fills me with dread. It fills me with absolute dread. That would be the first one. And second one, well, I don't suppose it's that much of a problem. We could do the repêchage and then the weekend after, then do player of the year. So,
well,
I don't know.
Well, it's actually... the same weekend.
Oh, is it?
So the final game, the deciding weekend of the repêchage, is 200 kilometres away from Monaco.
Hang on. I don't know about you, but I've always wanted to travel France by TGV.
Is there TGV going across the south coast that way?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there really is. Is there? Yeah, it's some very, very fast, impressive-looking trains.
What's that about the final, Phil? Repeat that. I missed that.
So the final weekend of the repêchage is the same weekend as World Rugby's Player of the Year, and Marseille to Monaco is about 200 kilometres.
Oh, my word.
Oh, my word.
Oh, my word. So we fly into, oh, my word, JB.
We fly into
Marseille.
Lads, beers, boys.
Two days of great rugby games and beers with the boys.
Exactly.
And then on the Sunday, we put on our tuxedos.
Yep.
Or our chinos and tweed.
Yep.
And get in a car or
TGV.
On a TGV or on a helicopter.
Go and talk to Richie about helicopters again.
Yes. I like that.
So I think
also I'm thinking potentially, because I don't know what the ground will be like, but I would imagine that potentially if we could start conversations about having an area of the hospitality in the ground at the stadium.
Don't. Let's not think about that just yet.
Well, I know, but I'm spitballing at this point. But so all I'm saying is, this could be really, really good.
We could say come along, but actually we can do our podcast at World Player of the Year like we did last year.
We'll do both.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. Happy with that.
Yeah. Definitely do a kind of beers in the pub. Maybe not necessarily a live podcast.
Yeah,
but do,
because
do
we actually
something.
Watched all the Autumn International games in. Where were we? Nice. On TV. And it was superb. It was really good fun.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So maybe it is just an Egg Chasers away weekend.
Yeah.
And we organise lots of gatherings and get-togethers and shenanigans and make it a, you know...
Something. We'll make it something.
People on tour only this time.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that film? I don't know if it's a film. Maybe it's just a YouTube clip, which I made into a film eventually. I don't know. It's with Jude Law and the guy who's going out to Afghanistan. Have you seen that?
No.
And that is a really awkward thing where he goes, when are you going to Afghanistan next, mate? And he goes, next week. He goes, that's amazing. I'm free. Can I come? And it's like completely staged. It's a completely staged thing. Look it up. It's horribly cringeworthy. Sometimes I think when we talk about our tier two tours, we kind of end up sounding the same. Let's do it.
Hands in. Let's go.
Let's go. Woo.
No, we're much cooler than that.
I think definitely. I'm substantially cooler than Jude Law.
Well, anyway, if we should sort of canvas opinion, if you might be keen to potentially do Marseille, let's sort of throw
let's
out...
Just say, let's just do Marseille anyway.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, we're
going
to be doing it
that.
Anyway. Much like going back to the original one, when we said we're going to Romania, and then loads of people sort of said, we're going to come too, and we turned it into a thing.
Yes.
Maybe at this point, we'll just say we're going to be in Marseille for the repêchage weekend,
yep.
Seeing either Hong Kong, Germany, Canada, or Namibia or Kenya get to the Rugby World Cup final, the very last place in the south of France on the Med. And if you might be keen, check out Skyscanner from where you are. Check out the Airbnb and see if you might be keen with some boys.
Yeah, other aircraft apps are available.
Very true.
Excellent.
There we go.
Well, if any aircraft company wants to give us a discount, we'll mention them as much as they want.
Exactly.
So, moving on from that World Rugby news to another bit of World Rugby news that Tim hinted at the start of the podcast. So, it's rumoured that World Rugby are going to review some possible law variations to come in the coming years. And the rumour is that these are going to be broadly based around two parts of the game. One, the role of the TMO,
okay.
and the other being contests in the air.
Okay.
So, Tim, JB, have you got any idea or any proposals that you could put forward in regard to either of those things?
Yeah, loosen up the rules for contact in the air. I think they basically have been, almost like by precedence, they've been loosened up, really. So
are you referring back to the Benjamin Fall?
I mean, if the intent is, I mean, the whole point was it'd be taking intent out of it, you know. But
yeah,
if that's back in, I guess they've already done that job for us.
Well, yeah, I kind of think the opposite is true more generally, that the precedent ushered in this over-the-top handling of it.
I agree with you.
In the way that in football, you suddenly started seeing about 20 years ago when they brought in... when people started doing stuff, you can't raise your hands to another player, meant if you put your hand on the shoulder of another player and he does a dive, well, sorry, you deserve a red for that.
Yes,
you raised your hand, bollocks. So the contact in the air is you made contact, therefore it's not as nuanced as there's no two contacts in the air which are ever the same. It's much more nuanced, and just saying you made contact is not sufficient to say always, therefore that must be a red card, which is the way it feels sometimes like it has been officiated over the last few years.
Yeah, but I think you've somewhat overlooked the fact that rugby worships at the altar of high level legal professionals. I think now they've put as an accepted defence that Benjamin Fowle's intent is to be taken into account. That's a game changer.
What do you think? That would potentially be a complete game changer.
Yeah. It rips up everything that we know about high tackling.
But then it was interesting, the World Rugby statement, we have covered this before, but the World Rugby statement after that referred more to the, well, it referred specifically to the interaction with the other player, Anton Lennart-Brown, which caused him to ricochet and not be able to compete, rather than the intent.
Didn't intend it because someone else did something to him, and
World Rugby, their statement just took the intent bit out of it. So I don't think they want to use that precedence of intent.
No, I'd imagine that's the last thing they'd want to do.
So I was thinking about this today, actually, watching the World Cup final, obviously football World Cup final.
Footy with the boys.
Footy with the lads. And they were talking about the intent for handball. And intent is such a difficult thing. It's such a subjective thing to try and determine someone's intent.
Mm.
The only thing in rugby is the deliberate knock-on. But even that is not really officiated in a way of intent, because
it's outcome, isn't it?
Well, most of the way is they determine it. Was he in a position to catch the ball?
Yep.
If he's not, then it's given as a deliberate knock-on. That doesn't mean he had intent to slap the ball down.
Well, that's the other one, isn't it? If they slap it up, their intentions are good. If they slap it down, but you know, that's an outcome-based thing. It's not an intent-based thing.
Yeah. So intent is a very, very dangerous thing to try and introduce. And I don't think that's where world rugby are going,
no.
For the record.
Yeah, well, but so is, equally, in a game like rugby, so is this sort of box-ticking, was contact made, yes, therefore, outcome equals. That doesn't work in rugby either.
Well, they are a little bit, as you said before, a little bit more nuanced than that, because it's now, was there contact in the air? Was the player that did not catch the ball in a position to catch the ball? Or could he have been in a position to catch the ball? And then does the player... So it's a little bit, as you're describing, Tim, I think it is slightly... It's slightly better than that, but it's still, I would say, it is not a perfect system. And I'm not sure how you can get a perfect system when
I know how you can.
Oh.
You can get every rugby player. What you can do is, instead of having all these World Rugby case study videos that they show their refs,
yeah,
from games, this is red, this is yellow, this is penalty only, what you do is you show them a game of Aussie rules football and you have the law, let the boys play. Is the law in the law book? There you go, done.
Well, I mean, I don't want to hark back to 3 years ago when I came up with this rule, but in the same way they have the TMO, I think in another shipping container they should have an excited young boy. And the excited young boy can rule on, is that legal or is it not, based on how exciting and how compulsive he finds the actions on the field. So if he's clapping and screaming with joy because, you know, there's some sort of high shot, well, let it go. It clearly appeals to the kids. If not, well, then we might have to look at things. So, but you might end up with unintended consequences, like, you know, kicking the ball results in a penalty, that kind of thing. The other ridiculous option is, it should go kind of like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. It should go to a fan app, and then all the fans can can vote. Yeah,
ask yes. The audience.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one little corner of the stadium where there's 100 people in, yeah, I don't know, green seats or something, or bright yellow seats. I don't know.
Neutrals.
And they, and it goes to them. I love that. Yeah. It's ridiculous, obviously, but I love the.
Basically, you get the World Rugby app, right, and you download it, and at the very start, you then have to declare what nationality that you are.
Yeah.
And then those accounts are disabled during the game.
Yeah, but I'd just be declaring that I'm...
No, because you have to undownload it and then... People are going to get around that.
Yeah.
Oh, just let everyone vote.
Let the boys vote.
Yeah.
No, it's like jury service. Like, but randomly, they'll pick people on the way into the ground. Randomly, like, whoever... It's just luck of the draw. Whoever comes through the turnstile, that number gets... There you go. You're now, you get given a little
voting
box with buttons on.
Yeah, like Shepherd's Crook.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just get hot. Or like two really big, burly men. excuse me, Mr. Jones, we need to have a word. And they just...
You're in the hot seat.
Yeah, you shuffle him off into a shipping container somewhere.
So, I think that corrects all the problems that we have with the rugby laws right now. TMO 1 is interesting, actually, because I wonder if this is in the light of VAR in the World Cup, where it's not the referee who decides what to review. There is a separate panel of referees who are reviewing everything, and they will tell the referee. But that kind of already happens in rugby anyway.
Well,
because if the referee misses foul play, the TMO will go back to him.
And also, I don't think it would work in rugby as it is at the moment. There's no reason to say it won't work in the future. As it is, I believe referees like to referee in their own style.
Yeah, that's
true. I think a guy like Nigel Owens would be horrified by the thought of someone telling him what a result is.
What decision is. There are specific instances where you can. In the same way that, like, TMO now, you can only go for foul play or tries, that kind of thing, rather than, well, is it a line out to Team A or is it a line out to Team B?
Yeah,
it just doesn't matter.
Well, they usually use it for foul play like that, don't they? So
there are specific so scoring a try, instances of foul play. I think you can use it for. I think it has been used for determining whether a kick was successful.
Yeah,
but like in the Scotland Australia game in the World Cup, the quarter final where Scotland felt There should have been a review. I can't even remember the exact incident, but there should have been a review right on the 80th minute. And it wasn't something that the ref could have gone to the TMO with because it was a non-foul play type incident. It was like offside line out.
So I have seen, I can't remember the exact incident, but I have seen the referee basically use the TMO just at his discretion because nobody says, no, sorry, Nige, can't do it, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I just want to check what the restart is, for example. Is it a 22 or is it a scrum?
Yeah, so they do that.
They do use it for that occasionally.
I kind of think it's a tool for the referee. Let the referee use it accordingly. So if they want to look at something, let them look at something.
Yeah.
And I don't think they should be feeding through information to the ref either. I think if a ref misses it, I think it's all right for a ref to consult it, but if a ref misses something, that should be dealt with after the game.
Well, one of the issues I've had with the TMO is sometimes a long time after play has gone on and stopped, we've gone back for something which is a very, very, either a minor incident or could have been, and play gets held up over something that happened ages ago. I would like the reasons why a TMO can intervene to maybe be made clearer. And also, whatever it would take to stop these conversations between assistant referees and the referee, between the TMO and the referees, what I am seeing is...
Yeah.
What is your recommendation? Yeah. No, I just... Let's the ref has got his guys on the field that might have seen something. He's got screens. The referee can make that decision.
Yeah, I think if it's not picked up by the eyeballs of the touch judges, assistant referees, and referees, it shouldn't be allowed to go to video ref. Video ref just has to be consulted, and that's all. So actually the opposite to VAR. And because rugby's a different game.
But what you do, but in grounds, in rugby clubs, they quite often show replays of things afterwards. So many times has it happened where it's gone up on the screen? The crowd have made a noise. The refs looked and gone, hold on, let's have a look.
Yeah.
Well, personally, I think at that point it's too late.
So I'm okay with that because it's going to give you more often the right outcome. And that's what I want. I want consistency and it's never going to be perfect, but I want as frequently as you can the correct outcome.
Yeah, I guess the danger with my suggestion is if there was a bent referee, I don't know, Romanian, they could potentially really abuse
by just saying that I didn't see it. I didn't see anything.
I didn't see it. So yeah, I guess.
So yeah. So leading on from that, two of the Super Rugby games this weekend, and there was two red card decisions. There was one red card given to Ed Quirk for an alleged punch, which was reviewed by the TMO, and I don't know, Tim, have you seen this?
Yeah, ridiculous.
I've not seen it.
This is absolutely ridiculous.
Okay.
There is contact with his hand and his head, but it's in the middle of a ruck. It's hands and legs and arms and everything are going everywhere, and there's no force. There's no way you can determine intent from it, but a red card was given. So that was a completely ludicrous decision.
Do you know what? This sounds ridiculous until you are actually... And there's always exceptions because Nigel Owens, Wayne Barnes didn't play at a high level. But these very, very young guys that are only ever referees and never played, I have issues with. Because Glenn Jackson, he wasn't the ref, was he?
No.
No, I can't imagine Glenn Jackson giving a red card for that. Because he understands the game of rugby at the elite level.
Yeah, I think broadly I am with you on that.
But I actually think the guys at the elite level are the guys who are going to be less tolerant to foul play.
This we're not talking about foul play, I think. We're talking about...
We're not talking about foul play. We're talking about incidental rugby contact or handbags.
Sorry. It's not even handbags in my mind. It's a rugby incident. His hand did go into his head because a ruck is a very messy place to be. There are body parts going in every direction.
Yeah. So. Oh, sorry. Yeah. It's very serious.
That could have been handled better.
That was one of those box ticking. In a very football style, was there contact between hand and face, irrespective what context, intent, force,
or anything? Oh, my God.
It was made on just purely on was hand and face at any point in contact.
Yes.
Ridiculous.
So that was a ridiculous red card. In then the Chiefs Hurricanes game, which was a great game, but there was...
That's a joke. Sorry, I've just seen it now.
The Ed Quirk red card.
Good God.
So, that's a joke.
Sorry, can I just add something to this? Brad Thorne. Quote, he's worried for rugby's soul. And he was playing against Ed Quirk.
Yeah. It was... He was not playing. He's coaching the Reds.
Yeah. Sorry. That's what I meant.
Yeah. So, there's that incident. And then, have you seen the Jonathan Fowley, I'm probably saying that wrong, hit Tim?
So, okay.
Yeah.
How do I spell Fowley?
F-A apostrophe A-U-L-I.
A-U... Ooh, exciting.
So, this really reminded me of the Sonny Bill Williams hit on Anthony Watson last year. Because...
Oh!
Goosen was being tackled, so was going down, but Fowley, in World Rugby's definition, was incredibly reckless and no arms and made contact with the head. So it was almost identical to the Sonny Bill Williams.
So yeah. I assume one. That Jonathan Fowley's done this before, because I'm watching one from a year ago.
When... Yeah. He's got previous on this a couple of times.
Ooh, exciting. Yeah.
So no red card given.
Yeah.
No review, no red card. He has subsequently been given a 6-game ban.
And who did he smash?
Goosen.
Where's Goosen?
Usen or Goosen, who's a Hurricanes winger. He's actually playing at 13 in the game.
Ah, got you. Ooh, exciting.
Right. So the bit for me is, it comes back to the point that I always try and make, which is, make the rules whatever you want, really, but make them easy to apply consistently and then apply them consistently. The inconsistency is what gets fans and us so frustrated with the game.
Yeah, completely agree.
Completely agree with that.
I'm searching for this hit. Does it look good?
I'll show it to you afterwards. It is. It's pretty brutal.
Is it?
Yeah. Goosen. So Chris Boyd, the Hurricanes DOR or head coach, whatever his title is, who's going to Northampton, said that post-game he failed HIA at the time.
Oh, that's no good.
And then after the game, so an hour afterwards, failed another HIA.
That can happen for
tackles that aren't worthy of a red card and a 6-week ban.
It can happen from completely accidental incidents. This was let's just call it a reckless high shot, and it happened.
That's fair.
So there you go.
So all these things will be talked about in San Francisco when World Rugby representatives all get together, because they're getting together at the Rugby Sevens World Cup.
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, that's obviously the most convenient place for them all to get together.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's tough gig.
Yeah, exactly. Good tough for them. Gig. Good for them for all flying business class to San Fran. Oh, wow.
I've just passed Jay the...
Jeez.
A video of the hit.
How did he not get picked? I can't believe that they didn't look at that.
It's astonishing that did not get picked up.
And the worst part is, the touch judge or the ref runs in your eye line. Like, you can see him looking at it. Ooh.
Anyway, so there we are. So,
I have, given the choice, I have much, I would always prefer to a retrospective red card and 6-week ban than what happened in the other game. I would prefer that over a red card that was completely not warranted.
Yes, I think it should be dealt with afterwards.
That completely ruins the game.
Yeah, it should absolutely be dealt with afterwards. Absolutely.
So they're getting together. So we should just briefly talk about the Sevens Rugby World Cup, which is quite interesting for a couple of reasons. One, it's in San Francisco at the baseball stadium. The what's it called?
Don't know.
It's the Giants Stadium. I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, it's right on the harbour.
AT&T.
It's a really amazing location. It really is. It's fantastic. Right on the harbour. As you're on the main road, you drive past it, and it's right out there on the water. So it's going to look incredible. Exciting for America to taste rugby. It's also interesting, because this is the first Rugby World Cup where there's no pulls. It's a straight knockout.
Yeah, it's time constraints, I think.
This is interesting, the format. So it's... there's 24 teams. The top eight have got a bye for the first round. Then the bottom 16 play off in eight games and then go on to play against the top eight. So you're likely to get it down to the kind of usual eight candidates, including Fiji, New Zealand, England, South Africa, USA. Yeah, USA have got a decent chance.
Good. Well, I don't really know what else to say about the sevens.
Fiji have called up some whopping talent.
Have they? What, like Radrada talent?
Radrada. Tuisova, yep. Nakarawa. Big talent.
Yeah, that's quite...
But I really hope... Obviously, I hope England do very well. But I hope that the USA do really well. Do you Carlin Isles and Perry Baker show up. Our boy, Perry Baker, JB.
Our boy. Yeah. He doesn't have an egg chaser's tie, does he?
Dressed, Perry Baker.
Yeah, we need to get him a tie, actually.
We should have given him a tie.
Yeah, we should have. Maybe tell you what we should do. Maybe we should make bow ties for next time we go over.
Ooh.
Wow.
That's exciting.
That is exciting. Can't remember what I was going to say about this. Oh, yeah. Fiji. Do you think the Fiji Sevens, because obviously they won the Olympics, one of the biggest things on the island, and they're kind of getting recognition beyond the size of the team. Does that make sense? Like, you know, for instance, you know, any New Zealand national team doesn't really get much exposure unless you're the All Blacks. I wonder if the Fiji Sevens can get so big they can just continually attract and keep top talent. So they don't, you know, go off to wherever it may be, New Zealand and play, you know, Sevens there
or France,
All Blacks or, yeah.
Or England.
That kind of thing. If Fiji Sevens can stand alone and then just kind of retain the guys that they have.
Well, those...
It's a bit like Harlem Globetrotters kind of thing. They could just go around and do loads of exhibitions for tons of cash.
But the retention of talent is a really important point. And Radrada and Tuisova, so Tuisova especially, picking to play for Fiji, I think is really important. It's important for the game that happens, that the smaller teams retain their best talent. So long may that continue.
Exactly.
Agreed.
And if they can win World Rugby Sevens and if they can win Olympic Games, that has got to be a big draw. Yeah. It has to be.
Do you want to talk about the Samoa win?
Yeah, so we kind of hinted at it before with Germany going into the repechage. Because they lost both legs to Samoa. So Samoa have automatically qualified for Rugby World Cup 2019.
They're an islands pool, aren't they?
I couldn't actually tell you.
I think they are. And the winner of the repechage will have the pleasure of getting crushed by New Zealand and South Africa.
Oh, lovely. I'm just looking at these teams. Germany, Canada, Hong Kong, and...
Africa.
Gold Cup.
Either Namibia or Kenya, probably.
Yeah.
You've got to say, Canada's got to be leader in the clubhouse for that one.
Yeah, you'd think so. Canada are not playing particularly good rugby at the moment.
But they can get a handful of professional rugby players together.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sounds like it could be quite important.
So the Germany Samoa scoreline, the first game they got pumped by 60 points.
Yeah.
But the game in Germany this weekend just gone... it was something like 40-odd, 30-odd.
33-42.
There you go. So they made a good account of themselves. They'll like to have a crack because they'll have all of their best players playing, unlike when we saw them in Madrid. And it would be good for the game for them to just make a competitive attempt. And also, if they can get all of their players, their best players available for when they play the Rugby Europe, Nations Cup, whatever it's called, the Tier 2 Six Nations, that's, again, it's good for the game to get more strong teams.
I know I need to get over it now. I'm aware of this, so you don't need to tell me. But the Tier 2 stuff is just... The shine has gone off it completely.
No, I'm completely with you. I'm not done being bitter about it yet.
I look at the scores now, I think it just doesn't matter, does it? Because the team that deserved it have been thoroughly screwed, and that just sticks in my throat. Even though these teams, I mean, Canada's done nothing to deserve my rage, neither has Hong Kong or the African Gold Cup like runners up, but it just really, really knocks me.
Yeah,
because we all know what happened.
Yeah. It's tough to take.
It is, isn't it? Mother. Anyway.
So there's another interesting bit of speculation that came out of a French paper this week about having a Rugby Europe Championship in the same way that the Football European Championship would take place every 4 years. Now, there are no details, so everything was speculation.
Where's it come from? I mean, I know it's come from a French paper, but where have they got it from?
Don't know. Honest answer is, I don't know. But it probably aligns with the attempt to realign the world rugby calendar. Mm. So we got a single unified calendar and everyone's playing games and internationals at the same time, which you can do anything you want if you have that.
Yeah.
So the assertion is that instead of taking away the Six Nations, they take away one summer tour in four.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't know. So, you know, we always assume, don't we, that the teams that the home nations meet the most are the other home nations. And actually, it's far from it. The teams that England meet are probably going to be, they're going to be South Africa four times this year alone.
Four times consecutively.
Yeah.
Before they play anyone else.
So, you know, maybe more European games are in order. So I guess there's that angle.
And then it's good to get these smaller teams, tier two teams, some exposure of playing against the bigger boys.
I agree with that. But who are we looking at here? Are we looking at Romania, Georgia, and...
Yes.
Romania, Georgia, Spain, Germany.
Germany.
Portugal, potentially.
Russia,
Portugal. Yeah.
Do you know what I would be in favour of? Keeping the summer tours as they are, and then sending a Saxons, a Wales A, a Scotland... Because that would be really competitive.
That would be my thoughts as well. Because Germany aren't going to get anything from being pumped 100 points to nil by the prime England team.
Yeah.
But they would, even if it was like a development type England team, they could gain a lot from doing that, and the development team could do it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I don't like. I understand the logic of that, and it will be competitive games for those nations, so it will serve in that sense. The thing that I think it could potentially do, though, which that won't achieve, is cash for these small emerging nations, so they can actually make the step up closer to the Six Nations level. And if you send, just like the Churchill Cup used to do when you sent them over to North America, you send the Saxons over, no one cares.
Yeah, but I tell you what, not a day goes by that I regret that we started this podcast after the Churchill Cup finished. Because that is the tournament that I'd most want to visit. It was class.
Of course, that would have been fun. But who stayed up and watched the Churchill Cup? Well, yeah.
I watched it religiously.
Us total rugby noses, very, very niche, top of the pyramid rugby noses.
Apex predators.
Exactly. Who even knew that it was happening? So I agree with you. The games would be competitive. But it depends what your objective is. Is the objective to give these guys games that might help prepare them for a World Cup 2 years later on against some slightly higher caliber competition? If that's the aim, yes, do it.
Well,
if the aim is to get these nations closer to Six Nations level, so the Rugby Europe Championship and the Six Nations, which is what you're always talking about, is let's help that league grow rather than interfere with the history of the Six Nations.
I do tend to agree with you. Like, the cash won't be there, will it?
No, it won't against anyone, really.
But World Rugby are not short of a bob or two.
Well, you know, this is sort of like Jeremy Corbyn-style spending plans on the banker's bonus. He spent it 86 times before anything gets done. I would just a bit cautious about spending more of World Rugby's money. That said, I mean, I think there's a middle way to be had here. I think if you want to explore it, you've got to start with the development teams. But then if you can expand it to the big boys, why not?
Oh, yeah. You can. But it's
a big if.
Right now, I can tell you it would not be competitive games.
Yeah. And
Georgia are by far the best.
Like, I can tell you, you're absolutely right.
They played Ireland a couple of years ago, were comfortably beaten by 50 points. And Georgia are a damn good team.
Yeah.
But the gulf, and it was an Ireland second team nearly. The gulf is right now too big. So
is the gulf too big to Italy?
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, like, this is a... and I'm sure once upon a time, football's a very different sport because it's so broadly played, but...
Yeah.
Nations rise and nations fall, and the European Championship, what it serves as, it's a big focus every 4 years, fills in that World Cup thing. You've got to imagine, what could this be in 30 years' time, 20 years' time? Not what will it be if we did it in 2021?
Yeah, I guess also the politics here are, you're going to have a World Cup, right? And that puts enormous strain on everyone.
Yeah.
And then you've got Lions, and that puts enormous strain on everyone. Can they afford to get this in the calendar? Because presumably, those three tournaments will be back to back to back, wouldn't they?
Yeah, something has got to give then.
Yeah.
You can't do this. Something's got to give in terms of reducing Premiership games, reducing Heineken Cup games, doing something differently. But the clubs wouldn't accept that.
No.
Or it brings in more cash from sponsorship revenue that could then help facilitate centrally contracted players and an agreement with clubs.
I hear what you're saying, but ultimately it's the clubs that have all the power. And even with central contracting, I don't think I want the club game to be dismantled for more international. I think we've got it broadly right, the club national mix. And I'm not, central contracts work fine for Ireland, but they don't work fine for pro rugby.
Pro rugby
as in pro 14.
Really?
Not really, no, because look at pro 14. We keep saying that there's too many dead rubber games. I mean, you don't. What did Johnny Sexton play, like? Two Pro 14 games.
I see what you're saying.
He didn't play any outside of Dublin.
And I'd hate to see the Premiership go that way just because they can't get Maru Toji. But maybe it goes the way of saying, like the NFL, there's sort of a conference system. They somehow managed to merge Europe and the Premiership.
Yeah.
I'm into that idea.
That's the way, and like NFL, which is 16 weeks.
Yeah.
Something like that. And Super Rugby's 18 weeks. Whereas if you count the Northern Hemisphere, Premiership and Europe, if you play in all of them, it's something like 32 weeks.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, actually.
If
they could merge those two competitions somehow, I would be in favour of that.
Merge them in like an umbrella, but they're two separate entities, like the AFL and the NFL.
Yeah, and then you have a playoff system at the end. I mean, it'd probably be a hell of a competition. So you can win your own league. Yeah. And then maybe, I don't know, I'm going to have to write it down.
And you guarantee that you're going to get the best play, because you'll have the highest standard, you'll get the best players playing all of the time, because there's only, 16 games.
We need to think about this a little bit more.
Absolutely.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Absolutely. So, something we've been threatening to do for a little while.
Uh-oh.
Do some previews for next season.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
We're fast approaching rugby again, Northern Hemisphere, club rugby again. Pre-season friendlies will be starting in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So we normally like to preview, work our way through the Premiership teams, the Gallagher Premiership teams, doing a bit of a preview of players in, players out, where they finished last year and where we think they're going to finish this year. And we normally start from the bottom and work our way up, which would mean this week would be Bristol Bears and Worcester Warriors to review.
Bristol rugby first, then.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to continue to call them Bristol Bears. I am going to stay on brand with this.
Bears.
No, I'll catch up.
Go Bears.
I think they're finally acquired. They have recently acquired all social media channels, eventually.
Oh, really?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, what was the thing that they did the other day? There was a hashtag which was amazing.
Oh!
Gallagher! Yes. Gallagher!
It was Gallagher did a hashtag.
The way we play.
Something like the way we play, which on Twitter, it comes up with loads and loads of fantastic rugby offerings. On Instagram,
not so much. Yeah.
Not so much.
You probably don't want to be doing that on Instagram.
Definitely not at work anyway.
Yeah, given that I'm on my work laptop at the moment.
What was the one that they had when we were at Sale? It was a Premiership one and it was like, you know, hot picks or something.
Yes.
And it was predictably explicit. I don't know how they do this. I mean, they've got paid professionals there. Just check your hashtag before you do it.
Oh, wow. The way we play on my personal phone.
Can I have a look at some way we play pictures?
That one?
Oh,
is that
wow.
A rugby picture? Is JB looking at a rugby picture?
It could be, actually.
It could be a rugby team. I'll say that.
The boys are having fun.
I mean, that could definitely be a rugby team.
And they're
letting the boys play.
Yeah, and
they are letting the boys play.
Yeah, and that's the problem, really, with these hashtags, the way we play. I mean, rugby by its very nature is quite homoerotic. I mean, I could be looking at those photos for a good 5 minutes before not realising what I'm really looking at.
That guy looks like David Flatman.
Yeah, oh, look at these guys. This must be a great club. Must be fancy dress social.
End of season, do they really into their fancy dress?
Camouflage.
Do you know what? A good game is a quick game. So come on, let's summarise.
Just whilst we're on homoerotic rugby stuff.
Oh, yeah.
God, it's about 8 years ago. I used to live with a mutual friend of ours called Peter Jones.
Jonesy.
And he used to have this thing about just ordering, you know, basically rubbish clothes. He'd just get loads and loads of rubbish clothes. And I was really, really in a rush to get to work. So I just pulled on a T-shirt, which he had ordered from the Beach Rugby Association. So a beach rugby T-shirt. So I threw it on. It says rugby on it. And then when I got to work, one of the other IFAs pointed out that my T-shirt said Beach Rugby, play with real men. Yeah.
Why not?
Exactly.
It's good advice.
let the boys play.
It's like, yeah, obviously I play with real men. Bristol,
right. So they have comfortably the most incomings and outgoings of any squad this season.
Don't worry about the outgoings unless they're big ones.
Well, no, wrong. Worry about the outgoings because why do teams not learn?
You get rid of the players that brought you.
Exactly.
So I think a lot of them are kind of squad releases and
academy
players.
That's the thing.
The bit that I would be worried about is their front five. So the pack is your tight five in the Premiership. If you don't have that, you could have the best back line in the world. You could have half a dozen Charles Peter Towers in your back line.
Mm.
If they're getting no ball, they can't do anything.
Well, who's going to pass them the ball?
Well, Charles Peter Tower, 9 through 15.
No one's passing that ball.
Well, true. So some of their losses, they lost Gaston Cortez to Leicester Tigers. They've lost Suwane Tongawea to Amptill. They've lost Ryan Bevington to Dragons. So they've lost three experienced, like very, very experienced, not the best,
yep,
but very experienced props there. They've brought in John Afoa, who is, I mean, he's still a great professional, but he's 35 at the start of the season. And he's got a lot of miles on the clock. There's only so much longer. So I am looking at their squad. I'm a little bit worried about that tight five. They then have some undoubted talent in the back line. They brought in Sturzaker, the Australian scrum half, Madigan, PC, Hurrell. They got both Piatowers, the centre and the fullback wing. Leua, Alapeti Leua. They got Luke Morahan, who scored, if you remember, from the 2013 Lions tour.
Yes,
I do. A phenomenal try against the Lions. So they've got talent in the back line. They've got talent in their back row. Steve Luatua, Jack Lamb, George Smith coming in there more in a potentially coaching role, but he will play. and Jordan Crane. So they've got everything outside their tight five looks great.
That's unlucky.
But that's not going to bode well in the Premiership.
Well, it worked well for Ulster.
So yeah, I'm a little bit nervous. Right now, Bristol are my favourites to go down, to go straight back down.
I just don't understand why teams don't learn. Now, everyone says, oh, this time it's different. There's more academy lads coming in. Pat Lam has done this, that, and the other. Yaddy, 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 yaddy. I've heard it all before. And I've seen it all. I've seen it all before. It happened with London Welsh.
Who have they got rid of that you would have kept?
Exactly. It doesn't really matter about the names. It matters about the team. So I couldn't tell you who London Welsh should have kept, but I guarantee they'd have done a better job than the guys that they brought in. And I think the same about Bristol last year. If you've got a team that wins you something,
There's not a huge amount of, there's not like masses of players that have joined since this season. There are a number, but
there's
let's remember
quite a lot, like, Tim.
Charles Piatow, Ian Madigan was already there.
Mm. Yeah, yours.
Jack Lamb, Stephen Luatua, already there. But Jordan Crane was already there.
So think about it this way.
A lot of these guys have played with him in the Championship.
Think about it this way. Exeter basically went through this process, but they released their guys a year later. So they had, when they first came up, the biggest squad in the Premiership. Actually, so did Bristol, I think, last time that they were up.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. I think they might have been on as many as like 50 players.
So I'll be interested to see, Tim, because I kind of hope you're right. I like having Bristol in the Premiership.
I'm indifferent. I don't like their kit.
Well, their kit's not great.
But I do like their support base, to be fair.
Yeah.
And they do bring something. Yeah, actually, that's not entirely fair. They've got money. The kit has improved since last time.
Decent ground.
Very decent ground. Good infrastructure.
Great night out.
Shame about the kit. Shame about the nickname. But other than that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of warming to this nickname.
The way we play.
The way we play, boys.
So any re-raise on me saying Bristol are my favourites to go back down?
Nope.
You're happy with that?
No. If they play it very, very loose. I mean, the scrum as a weapon is less important than it was 5 years ago, but it's still a huge factor.
Yeah. It's a factor, and particularly as you get towards the British winter, it becomes a bigger and bigger factor every week. So in September, when the pitches are nice and firm and Monaghan and Piatow are stepping around everyone and Madigan's pulling the strings, great stuff. Mm. In December, up in Sale, the AJ Bell in
December. Well, it's
December.
A perfectly manicured ground, so I don't know why you picked them.
With the Manchester weather.
No. Tell you what, the I've been watching with interest going on in the Championship. That is going to be keenly contested up the top. Mm. London Irish are going to have Ealing Trailfinders hot on their heels,
and Ealing have signed some interesting players, all young English backs that people like. I mean, they've taken a handful of lads from Harlequins, I think.
Mm. Be interesting. Yeah, but how wrong were we last year? How off were we?
What did we say?
We said Irish for the drop, didn't we?
We did say Irish.
No, we said Worcester.
Did we?
We said Worcester, and yeah, we did.
I'd have to go back and look at it, but
yeah.
Yeah, well, if we said Irish, we were right. If we said Worcester, we were wrong. And I think we can all agree on that.
I think after week one of last season, we said Irish will be all right. We could well be all right, and Worcester look like they'd gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and one thing we did say last year, which we're probably going to say again this year, Saracens and Exeter are the best two teams.
Yeah, 100%.
We'll get to them in future weeks, because now we're talking about
Worcester Warriors.
Worcester Warriors.
I don't really understand Worcester. I mean, they seem to produce players. They have a pretty powerful back line when they want to play. They can play nice, expansive rugby. They've got great facilities. The money's there. They win a couple of games.
Hasn't there been some issues off the field?
Yeah, you are right. Issues. I mean, well, there's been some rumours of issues. Is that the same as there being issues?
They've got a few expensive guys there.
Yeah, I mean, they don't shirk when it comes to signing players. So all the bits and pieces there, and most importantly, all they need is a run of games, and they get, you know, a fairly full stadium. So I just don't know why they can't pull it together. I hope that they do better this year.
I want to be a little bit confident about Worcester Warriors. One of their biggest problems last year was not really having a fly half.
Yeah.
Not having a dedicated fly half. When John O'Lance came in, apart from his kicking, because his kicking wasn't great, but he ran the show. He did very well. They also missed Huard through injury quite a bit last year.
Yeah, when he's
and Teo through injury last year. So if you get... So they've signed two fly halves. They brought John O'Lance back, and they brought in Duncan Weir, who was, I think he was there a little bit or loaned a little bit last season.
Yeah, what happened there? Because I don't remember him playing, but I do remember him wearing a Worcester hoodie.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what happened. I think he might have been loaned and then recalled and now signed.
But two very competent fly halves without being the league's best. They are competent and they'll be there all the time.
And they will be there all the time. And they are, you're exactly right, Tim. They're not going to, those two are not going to completely boss the show like an Owen Farrell or
AJ McGinty.
Or George Ford.
Or AJ McGinty.
Or AJ McGinty.
That's right.
Or Paddy Jackson.
Yeah.
But they will be very competent, very consistent, which is something that they've not had last season. So I like that. They've got a decent pack. They've got competition in a lot of places.
I think Will Spencer moving on will hurt them.
Yeah, losing Will Spencer. Denton's an interesting one because he's a handy player, but he's always a bit... I'm trying to think of the best way to put this.
He's soft.
Well, I worry about him mentally sometimes.
Yeah. Like, he's an amazing athlete.
He's a phenomenal athlete.
Has he not gone to Tigers?
He's gone to Tigers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so losing him, but they brought in Cornell Dupree from Edinburgh, who's good, big, strong player. So I think.
Whoa! Cornell Dupree, the guy who played 8 for Scotland and was completely anonymous. Like, they brought him in to carry the ball and he made 8 metres. That Cornell Dupree,
who's also been doing well at the back of a Cocker's pack.
I have concerns about their pack still. Their back five of the scrum, I think their back row could get bullied a bit.
Yeah, that's probably the bit that I would worry about most.
Who's the guy they got from Bristol who I really like?
Marco Mama.
Yeah, I think he's a great Premiership player.
I've probably not seen enough of him, I don't think.
He was injured a lot last year.
Yeah.
At front row as well, they've got some promising players. Jack Singleton at hookers, got a promising future. Nick Shonert's been involved in the England squad, and they've signed Ethan Waller, so that's their loose head prop that they've been really... In fact, he was there last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He didn't.
Sorry, he was there last year. And they... Yeah, I just...
They got Joe Taufete as well.
Taufete. Yes, they have got him.
But the phenomenally powerful USA hooker.
Yeah, they have got bits. I mean, they've got nice explosive bits here and there. I hope they do better because when they do play well, they play very, very nice rugby. But we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, they have also, they brought in a Hurricane, Fatialofa.
Fatialofa at lock.
He's probably a Hurricane squad player, so I don't think he'll set the world alight.
Mm. But. And they've also lost, I know he left mid last season, but Christian Scotland-Williamson, who's gone to catch balls in the NFL.
Well, more of a loss was the lock.
Will Spencer.
Yeah, Will Spencer.
Yeah.
Will Spencer is a pretty big loss.
Hmm.
I still think they'll be in the kind of bottom quarter, but I think we'll see some nice... I'm hoping, if they can get Huard and Teo fit for most of the season, if they can get Josh Adams and Bryce Heem firing, and they can get Lance Orweir, whoever they pick as their kind of number one fly half, if he can get the best out of that back line and the pack can create the platform,
they'll do all right. Just thinking about it a bit more, do you think for Worcester it's going to be about defence and continuity in defence? Because try scoring was not a problem. They had one of the league's top try scorers in Josh Adams.
Yeah.
I think they had. Did they win away at Welford Road? And scored a phenomenal try.
That didn't really mean anything.
The first thing that Phil said, I think, was Worcester's issue, and they have addressed it in the sense that they did not manage games, and they've got fly halves who will. I'm sure the game plan will be relatively simple and basic in the sense of play in the right area, and then when we're in the opposite, when we've won the territorial battle, then our playmakers like Hughard and Adams, and Teo and Pennell can let rip.
Yeah.
Well, good enough for me. Is that it? Are we done?
The only... So what are we saying about what's our sort of prediction of Worcester?
Second bottom.
10th. One above second bottom. But consistently competitive, I think I would like to add to that.
I think I'm going to say 11th.
Fantastic. All right.
We should really... record these somewhere. Can we use your board, JB, the back of your board to record our predictions?
I'd let you use the JB board of destiny, but it's full up with destiny.
Well, actually, there's some to rub off that you got wrong.
Yeah, I mean,
unless there's an incredible season and a couple of injuries, you could probably scrub off Marcus Smith will be starting a World Cup game.
Well, starting fly half for the World Cup was the statement.
Well, wait and see, boys. Wait and see.
I think it's too
it's
early.
A long way to go, yeah.
There could be half a dozen.
I know what I'll do.
Horrific injuries.
I've got another board in work which I'll bring home.
Okay.
This dungeon's going to look like the Glengarry Glen Ross sales room by the time that we've got all of our various whiteboards up. But
there's
it'll
also
be
just like pen and paper.
Forget that.
Yeah, we need something that's going to be permanent.
Yeah, I like the idea of having like an actual whiteboard, maybe with dual markers, with 1 to 15 on it, and all sorts of things. Yeah, so I'm going to screw up the board, and I'll get another one for the league as well. How's that?
Yes, let's do it.
Perfect.
Final bit, Super Rugby, quarterfinals or qualifiers, as they call them. Next week, so the four games, there's a repeat of the Hurricanes-Chiefs game, which we kind of explained last week. The second and third best team have to play each other in the quarterfinal. Crusaders host the Sharks, and I think that'll be a bridge too far for the Sharks. The Waratahs host the Highlanders, which will be, it's probably the most likely game for an upset, which should be quite a handy game. And then Lions host the Jaguares. Aguirre is playing in the qualifiers for the first time ever.
Good for them.
It is good for them. I think it will be a game too far for them. But you never know.
You never know. If we knew the result, we wouldn't play the game.
Absolutely. And on that bombshell,
let's go watch Love Island.
I'm gonna go and get myself a double down. Oh, actually, nice. I had a chicken incident today.
Oh, okay.
So I cooked as I normally
do. Is that a dish at KFC?
Not quite. When I describe this, you will not want this dish. So, as I normally do, I roast myself about a kilo of chicken on a Sunday to last for me for a few days worth of meals. Mm-hmm. Roasted my chicken. It was nicely cooling on the side.
Uh-oh.
I wandered off.
That sounds like a little bit of a euphemism when you say that.
Cool on the side.
This afternoon I went off and roasted my chicken.
What could have... Did it get snatched by a cat?
No cats. Although I was rudely interrupted making a tuna sandwich 2 weeks ago by a German Shepherd.
Oh, really?
In my kitchen.
Who's German Shepherd's that?
Next door.
Wow, terrifying.
That was.
Did you leave the plastic case of giblets in it?
No.
Giblets? When is this? 1970?
You still get chickens with giblets. You still keep the giblets
I've
in a bag
never,
for your sauce.
Ever seen giblets.
So I roasted it. It was a bit over a kilo of chicken breast. So no giblets.
So cooling on the side. I literally have no idea what's going to happen next.
So I came back, and from the other side of the room, I thought someone was playing a trick on me and had replaced my chicken with raisins.
What?
And as I got closer, there must have been more than 100 big black flies on the chicken, like a seething mass of big black flies.
That sounds like a horror film.
It was awful.
That actually sounds disgusting.
It was like, like in a horror film when there's a dead body and there's maggots and flies
like
all
a plague.
Over it. Yeah.
Oof.
Wow. Well,
thanks for that, mate.
So lovely. I'm gonna get myself a double down, and I'm gonna roast some more chicken for the week.
Bon appetit.
Well, yeah. On that anecdote, yeah. Right? Should we do a professional? No, let's just go. We're done.
No, let's just go.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye.
Thanks for listening to this point. See you on the next one.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.